This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasothi. In this past year, we've heard a lot about clinical trials and how important they are in the development of COVID-19 vaccines. Now, conducting research of drugs and vaccines on people is a key aspect of ensuring that they're safe and effective, and it has to be guided by ethical principles to ensure that people are not harmed or exploited in the course of research. We find out more today from Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick Enkasan, a coordinator of the Master of Health Research Ethics Program at University of Malaya, and Dr. Alex Pang from the Medical Research Ethics Committee at University of Malaya Medical Center. Welcome to the show. How are both of you today?
Hello, Meera. Thank you very much for having us. We are good today.
You're most welcome. thanks for taking the time. I know in UMMC, a lot of you are still battling COVID-19 and the number of patients coming in. So, thanks for, taking some time away to speak to us. We've spoken about medical research and people being used as objects. And I remember in the early days of when the vaccine actually came out, Dr. Musa Nordin, the consultant pediatrician, was very upset with me when I used the word guinea pigs. And I said, but people in the West have already been the guinea pigs, Dr. Musa. We shouldn't be afraid. Now, when we talk about conducting research on people, there are still the old fears about being used as what we refer to as guinea pigs. What are people's worst fears when it comes to participating in medical research, Dr. Alex?
Yeah, I think the first thing that people really worry about is about the safety, I guess. Yeah. So there are so many things that there are so many considerations in doing medical research. So I think the safety and also the efficacies are those the things that public may afraid the most, because this is something really new, investigational products that has not been really used in the practice. So I guess people might really worry about the efficacy and also the safety. Yeah.
Dr. Julia.
All right. Okay. Interesting word, guinea pig. I know that we don't like, to some extent, when research started, the research participant are like guinea pig, because it started with all those people who have no right to say, cannot say no and just follow the experiment just like guinea pig. But now things has changed. But always people are fear of the unknown, right? Unknown whether what is the adverse effect of this drug. And also when you study drug, it's always being compared with something. So that something is sometimes a placebo, meaning that a bogus drug. So the fear of, maybe I will get that placebo thing and not actual drug. So there is the fear that when in RCT, you normally can't choose. You are randomly assigned to any drug. So the fear of that, and the fear that when you are involved in a new drug study, you have to sometime stop whatever you are taking, right? Mm. So the fear is there as well, And also sometimes they are scared that they might not know that they can actually withdraw themselves from the study at any point of time. What if I don't like it and I have to stay until the end? So there's always this type of fear. In fact, actually people studied about, what are the research participant fear, and it's all about the uncertainty.
Okay.
And of course, sometimes there is mistrust, yeah?
Of course, but some people, but generally you find people coming forward when you have clinical trials and things like that. I was just reading in New Zealand, they're going to trial out a new vaccine for COVID-19. And, just like that, 100 people came forward. They were all happy to be a part of it. What is it that, what stems from this enthusiasm that people want to be a part of this? Because I can imagine the fear and the uncertainty, as you spoke about. But there are also people who are very happy to be a part of these trials.
All right, the altruism, the ability, and they are very proud to be part of that science to advance the well-being of the society, and also they must have this trust in the system that even though this is a new drug, there is a a system in place to protect their well-being. And I think that is the very strong motive, is to be able to contribute to science and to the larger society.
Right. Is it against the ethics of the whole idea of medical research if you incentivize people to be a part of these trials, Dr. Alex?
Yeah, in terms of incentivize, we don't really say that we give the incentive for the participant to be enrolled in the research or clinical trials. Instead of that, I would say that we will actually provide them the reimbursement for their inconvenience. Like, for example, if let's say they need to spend more time and efforts to the research, and maybe it will incur some costs, like, for example, the travel expenses and all that. So we will compensate them this kind of, whether it's in terms of money or maybe some items that compensate for their inconvenience. And also, I think also we need to really look into the aspect of the insurance coverage as well. So we don't really say it's kind of incentive to the family members, just in case this individual, having some adverse event, and maybe, you know, sometimes we don't really want to see it, but then it eventually happened. Mm-hmm. So I think the insurance coverage is in a way that compensate the individuals that participating in the research. So I think all these mechanisms just need to be right into the place that to safeguard the well-being and also the welfare of participants that participate in the research and also the clinical trials.
Go ahead, Dr. Joy.
Yeah, and it is a common practice in the US. It's not something that is hidden, but it's quite openly advertised. For example, you see, especially for healthy volunteers. So there'll be advertisement in big university about looking for healthy volunteers and actually promote that you can earn up to X amount of money if you complete the research. And there's actually a blog or a small group of people who are professional, who are research participant professional, who earns living based on participation in research, because a lot of clinical trials that do need healthy volunteers. So it is not wrong, but how much, that is still controversial, can be debated.
Yeah. What are key ethical principles that you need to uphold when you're conducting medical research?
Yeah, there are basically four. Basically, first is autonomy. Right, autonomy means that the person is given, have the right to decide in his capacity, have the right to decide whether he wants to participate or not participate. One is actually beneficial and mild maleficial. This is the same thing. It's about risk and benefit. So it's the researcher duty to make sure that the research participants are not harmed. And then this research is done to the benefit of the society, or benefit might not be directly to the participant, but it can be, or it must be, due to the benefit of the society as a whole. And another one is justice. Justice is about fair selection of participants. You make sure that when you study a disease, it is the group at risk of that particular disease is being included, right? Like, you can't do a worm infestation research in the urban when you know that the risk is more in those in the rural area. Yep. So those are the principles.
Okay. And what happens? Do we have, or are there hard policies on research misconduct? And then we can talk about whistleblowing after that, Dr. Alex.
Yeah, so I think when we talk about the research misconduct, so basically we can actually just summarize it into a few points that I think research misconduct can be, it's kind of irresponsible conduct of research, I would say. And usually when we talk about this research misconduct, it includes, like, for example, fabrication. So means that the researcher is just making up the results, and maybe they just record whatever data that they want. And also falsification. I'm not sure whether you heard about it. It means that the researcher trying to manipulate the research processes, or they just changing, or maybe they just omit the data. And whereas I think the other main concern when we talk about research misconduct is plagiarism. So it's like just copy the other person idea, and maybe they just copy some you know, of the these research results from the publications, and they reproduce it into their own kind of works. So, and of course, I think it does have some implications to the whole science itself as a whole, I would say. So, like, for example, I think when we talk about the outcome, there should be the publication. So, which is very essential to disseminate whatever research findings.
Okay.
So, if let's say there's any, you know, misconduct happen to publication, it does disseminate the wrong science to the people. And maybe some people might say, what is the big deal? I mean, having kind of maybe something wrong with this publication, it is just a piece of writing, right? But I think here I would like to emphasize is that whatever research findings that are going to be publicized is very essential, because knowledge can be generalizable. And, you know, it could be, you know, published in the reputable journal, and potentially it could change the policy eventually, or the practice. All right. So this is number one. And secondly, I would like to say is that all these research results could be replicable. So if let's say something is not, you know, conveyed correctly in that publication, so whenever it has on, especially some vulnerable population, like, for example, pregnant or children, so it does cause harm to the individuals and also the community. And also what we always say, that the scientific rigors of it, whether it is really necessary to do so, or, you know, kind of wasting of the resources and all that. So I would say it's just more than just a piece of paper when you have this kind of research misconduct. Yeah.
Dr. Julia?
All right. So let's I would like to tell you about the recent research misconduct, right? When COVID-19, you know, first came out, a lot of people want to publish. A lot of people want to say, I found that this is the side effect. I found that this is effective. So, you know, the latest research misconduct related to COVID-19 is the retraction of two papers in very high impact medical journal, which is that in the Lancet paper and also in the New England Journal. Right. So I just want to illustrate or demonstrate how bad it can be. So this is about, there is this paper with hundreds of thousands of patients, and supposedly for 600 hospitals. So they published on two things. One is on that the, you know, certain blood pressure medication is at greater risk of death if they develop COVID-19, as well as the use of hydroxychloroquine. So the impact of this when it is published is that, you know, all the research on hydroxychloroquine is immediately being stopped, because it showed that, you know, it can lead to death, right? And the second thing is that there are some countries already at the verge or already approved the policy for this medication, mm-hmm. have to retract back their policy. So that is the impact that we are seeing now. So they suspect something wrong with this paper is when, you know, the total amount of cases they reported is more than the official number of COVID-19 cases. So that are the impact that this research misconduct can have on the society at large, worldwide, actually.
Okay. All right. And it's very damaging, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It just causes a whole lot of, and, you know, now we're watching the same thing happening with ivermectin. You know, I would love to see what the outcome is going to be. I mean, everywhere they're doing research, even Malaysia is, you know, trialing the ivermectin to see how that works. It's interesting times when it comes to research, isn't it? Very, very interesting time.
Yes.
So exciting. But we'll come back and continue this discussion. We're trying to understand ethics in medical research. If you have a question for Dr. Julia or Dr. Alex, give us a call. It's 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In our Health and Living segment, we're discussing understanding ethics in medical research. On the line with me, Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick-Enkasan. She's the coordinator of the Master of Health Research Ethics Program from University of Malaya, and Dr. Alex Bang, Medical Research Ethics Committee from University of Malaya Medical Center. We've covered quite a lot, actually, about, you know, the whole idea of carrying out clinical trials and medical research, especially with COVID-19. But let's talk about consent. Why is it so important in medical research to get consent? And what does it mean if something goes wrong and you have given your consent? What does that actually mean? Who's going to take this one? Dr. Alex or Julia?
Alex. Okay. Alex.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just muted myself just now.
That's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, very.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So yeah, potentially, I think it's very important to have consent in place, especially for medical research, because I think it is very essential to give the potential participant to know what exactly the information about the consent is, the research is, and yeah, to make sure that they are volunteering in what they are going to participate. So I would say without informed consent, the subjects might not be able to fully understand what they are participating in. So yeah, basically, I think whenever the consent is given, so the research participant, yeah, they will express their voluntariness in providing the information or maybe the samples, for instance, some blood, some tissue samples. And these all samples could be used by the researchers to conduct their study. And probably like what the clinical trials that you mentioned just now, the research subjects, they give their consent to allow the researchers to test on the these investigational products, either it is a drug or maybe it is devices. So after the full consideration of the safety and the efficacy, as well as I think the other important aspect to be taken into consideration during this consent process is that the risk benefit analysis. So I think the researcher need to convey the message like what are the entail risks that could happen if let's say they agree to provide the consent and participate in the research. And also the other important part for the consent is that the researcher will provide this participant the option to quit the research or to withdraw from the research anytime without giving any reason. So this is to very important and imperative to ensure that the provisions of the human subject protection, so in view of the risk entailed from the research. Yeah.
Mm. So, earlier on, you spoke about insurance coverage. What if something goes wrong during the trial? Who's actually responsible? Dr. Julia?
All right. So when you talk about research trial, it's right, start from the recruitment, consent, right to the execution of the procedure or research itself. So when something goes wrong, it can go wrong anywhere along the process. Right. For example, let's say the clinical trial, for example, it's easy to understand. Clinical trial, we have drug trials, and then you have something goes wrong, can be the, let's say, the worst case scenario, death. Right? Mm-hmm. So when there's death, I mean, you can't really say who is at fault, whether it is really due to the medicine or is it something else? Because normally for example, in cancer research, patients that do have cancer. So there is a process which Alex can describe clearly when you have an adverse effect on the process what to investigate. But I just would like to emphasize that, you know, if it who gets wrong is a very tricky question. It depends on when I tell you about this research. What did I tell you? Did I really make you understand? Or is it something wrong with the execution, the procedure? Meaning instead of two, I give you four. So there's a lot of things that goes wrong. So that is why there is this very standard systematic investigation process in place, which I think Alex will be able to tell that a bit more clearly.
Mm-hmm. Alex?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so wherever something goes wrong, like for example, if there's any serious adverse event or reaction to the investigational products, so I think the investigators have the obligation to investigate, and also they need to report to the authorized regulatory bodies, like for example, NPRA, which is a national pharmaceutical agency. So they will report to them, and as well as the sponsor of the study, and of course the ethics committee themselves, and they need to investigate the cause and whether this is something directly or indirectly related to the investigational products. So again, I think this is something really tricky, because currently we still have the mechanism to oversight the whole process. So we want to see what are the, you know, from the perspective from ethics committee. So I think we will really want to see what are the actions taken, and what are the, you know, the preventive action or the corrective action has been taken by the researchers, just in case there's any adverse event happen to the participants.
Is there insurance coverage for anybody who participates in a trial?
Yes. Yeah, basically for all clinical trials that happen in Malaysia, I would say we will insist for the insurance coverage. As long as there's any intervention,
Earlier on you spoke about a medical research ethics committee. What does the ethics committee do compared to the others who, you know, evaluate and analyze this trial or medical research?
Maybe I can answer for this. Yeah, so basically, I think medical research ethics committee is an independent committee, which is actually composed of a group of people, including the medical, scientific, non-scientific, and also public representative. That sit in the board to examine all the research application that sent into the, you know, that will be carried out in that institutions. So I think the main role for this research ethics committee is to safeguard the right safety and also the well-being of the human research volunteers. And yeah, so I think our main role is that to provide timely and comprehensive, and especially the independent review of all the ethics applications, and to make sure that there's any due regard to existing laws, regulations, and the community attitudes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you work alongside other people, other committees?
You mean this committee?
The research committee, yes.
Yeah. So basically, we work closely together with the CIC, which is actually the Clinical Investigation Center in UMMC, and also with the hospital side. So I think the relationship in between these three organizations and committee is very important to ensure that the participants who are actually also the patients from the hospital are really being safeguarded whenever they agree to sign the consent to participate in the research.
Okay.
So basically, yeah.
What about people who are not given a choice to participate, like prisoners, for an example? You know, we always hear of concentration camps, you know, where, you know, back in the day, you know, poor prisoners, honestly, I mean, they had a pretty raw deal. I'm sure that doesn't happen today anymore. Please tell me it doesn't.
Because it should not. It should not, you know, it should not happen, because I think if you look historically, they are the target. Right, these prisoners are target, because at that point of time, I think must be in the before the 1970 or the 60s, they are not considered to have any right. Right, so and they are an easy target because you can control them. When you do a clinical trial, you need to be in a controlled environment. If you are required to eat once a day, you must eat once, something like that, just an easy example. So in prison, you can do it. So that's why they're very attractive, and then you know, sometimes they are controlled. So it's like when the authorities say yes, and it be yes. And in fact, this was the common practice. And in 1975, I think the U.S. research government found that 75% of the participants for new drug are from prisoners. So now they have a rule, a regulation when people want to involve prisoners in research. So now I'm happy to say that it will not happen, because all research, at least in Malaysia, all research need to go through an ethics committee.
Okay.
So that should not be an issue anymore.
So you know how COVID-19 vaccines were, you know, they're so new, right? It was something so new. They moved so quickly because there was so much funds that was pumped behind the development of a vaccine. As you said, it was a race. Everybody was trying to get their vaccine in first and approved. But it was potentially risky in a way, because it was so new, it was done over such a quick, a short period of time. For testing something that may be potentially risky like this, would there have been more safeguards in place, or it would have been the same as any other clinical trial, like, you know, any other that we would run, you know, even pre-COVID?
Yeah, I would say all trials, including the COVID-19 vaccine trial, is just like others. Trials are actually involving some risk. Yeah, however, this product, I think, need to be examined strictly and also require the governance by the authorized regulatory, like what I mentioned just now, MPRN in Malaysia. And also we know, like, FDA in US as well as EMA in EU countries. So these are all the regulatory bodies that really need to look into the stringent process of examination of these products before they can conduct any trials onto the human body. So I think for all these trials that we always start with preclinical studies, I think in which the researcher, they will study some animal models, and because they want to see how this compound work, or maybe this vaccine, how it works to organisms. Then after that, they will carry on with the phase 1 to phase 3 clinical trials. So all this process actually involve very stringent monitoring mechanism, I would say, and all the side effects and adverse events, even for emergency use of this vaccine also, I think the authority is still have the authority and obligations to make sure all these participants, whoever received these prior drugs or vaccine, will be safeguarded. Yeah.
Okay. We'll come back and continue this discussion. I want to talk about confidentiality and why that's important. We'll also talk about pregnant women. They're usually never part of a clinical trial. But, you know, it almost felt like a huge clinical trial in America when they introduced the COVID-19 vaccine to all these women in America. And also, I want to ask you, you know, we get a lot of flack here in Malaysia when we say the NPRA must approve a vaccine. And then everybody comes back and says, no, it's been approved so in here and here and everywhere. Why does NPRA have to now, go through its own stringent checks? Is that unnecessary or waste of time? What does that actually mean? We'll come back and find out more up next. If you have a question, to call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's Health and Living. Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick Enkasan, Coordinator of the Master of Health Research Ethics Program from University of Malaya, together with Dr. Alex Pang, Medical Research Ethics Committee, University of Malaya Medical Center, joining me to talk about medical research and ethics. We don't really talk about this. Very rarely do we have discussions like this, especially after COVID-19 and, you know, the vaccines were trialed on so many people. Some of the words we have used, you know, in the past, you know, the fact that, you know, the West, many of them were guinea pigs. Not really the case. I was told off on the show for using the word guinea pigs. Dr. Musa, I will never forget that, and I shall not use it again. But not really the case. We're looking through what ethics really means when it comes to research. Let's talk about confidentiality. Why is it so important that, you know, I mean, after all, I'm giving myself up. I'm telling you, look, I'm consenting to this, but confidentiality just does play a role. How do you make sure that, you know, people's information is not misused? Dr. Juliet, you are on mute. Yep.
Sorry. So confidentiality is about how you treat the research data, right? So especially important is if the data can lead to identification of that particular research participant. So normally when in research, you should have researcher declare what are the information that you need to take in the private health information that you need to take from the patient, like the gender, the name, for example, HIV status, sexual orientation, things like that. So you should declare it to the research participant, and you should tell them how are you going to manage it, like where are you going to keep the data, right? How long are you going to keep the data? Who have access to the data? So all these things must be declared to the participant, right? To the research participant. And with that, they consented that they know that these are the things that you take from me. This is how you keep it. I'm confident it is safe, right? So why is it important? Some people don't even want people to know their birth date, right? So we cannot gauge who wants, who are not private, who are private. Right, so you have to make it clear. So what can happen is some people will say, what's the harm anyway? People just know that you are, for example, you have a certain disease, right? But what people fail to see, sometimes some diseases, some conditions are stigmatized.
Yeah.
So by knowing that this person have this disease, you can lose your job. You can have family dispute, you know, that, and then you can be embarrassed. So all these things are something that is not really tangible. Sometimes people can't see it, but this is the reason why confidentiality is important. And you don't want people to suddenly call you because they know you participate in the research. They know that you have this disease and you want them to join your study. And, you know, those are something that should not happen, right? So it's very important because it can cause harm to the patient, even though harm is not a physical harm. It can be social harm. It can be other type of harm, embarrassment, right?
What about blood and tissue cells, those sort of samples which, you know, the patient might surrender? And, you know, it can be used for purposes other than what was consented to. And, you know, we wouldn't know, right?
That's an evolving thing. And I think Alex is the best person, being a pathologist, to explain about that.
Yeah. So regarding to the human biological samples that you mentioned just now, I think there are some issues that are going around whether these samples could be reused or, you know, can be used for the future research and all that. So I think all this need to still come back to the IEC approval, IEC or IRB, the ethics committee. So I think they need. I think all this need to be oversight by this ethics committee before the researcher can collect these biological samples for research. And also, I think the informed consent when given to the participants, also it needs to be explained explicitly what exactly they are going to do with these samples. Okay, so they should make it very clear to the patients that, you know, they are they have the autonomy to say yes or no, or they can withdraw anytime if they don't want to participate. They don't want their samples to be used for the future use.
So do they take the samples back?
I think it involves quite a multi-layer consent in this option, I would say. So, like, for example, they need to specify on what kind of research they are going to do with that samples. And also they need to specify on how is the storage, whether they will discard the tissues after the research or they will keep it for future use. And also, you know, some countries like Malaysia, I think we're also having the biobanking in a way that we store all these important tissues for future use.
Yep.
So all this need to be taken into consideration when they're trying to obtain the consent from the subjects.
Yep. It would seem like it's based on a lot of trust, right?
Yeah, exactly. And most importantly, I think also they need to tell the research subjects what are the information that they are going to disseminate to the persons involved in the research subjects, because this is something maybe prospectively will benefit them or the community itself. Yeah.
Okay. So when it comes to pregnant women, usually they're never included in a clinical trial or medical trial. Am I correct? But what are the ethical issues as to why you wouldn't include a pregnant woman. And as I said, tons of them were involved in
all
probably
right.
the largest trials when it comes
okay.
to COVID-19. Yeah.
All right. So I'm one of those person last time. You know, pregnancy is an exclusion criteria for any research, right? That was last time. But then we look into the ethics pillars, you know, one of the ethical pillars is justice, you know. You know, you pregnant, what the thing that I always remember is that this is from somewhere that I read, pregnant woman get sick, sick woman get pregnant. So there's a need to learn more about these drugs and treatment in pregnant women. So if you do not have, but pregnant woman is not a woman with a baby, the body changes. So they might react differently to drugs. So I think that is why there's a surge in this COVID-19, because people are not sure, will it be safe, especially to the fetus? Will they have any long-term, short-term side effect? And can the vaccine do that? Does the vaccine confer the same reaction or immunity to the pregnant woman? So there is a need to do research on pregnant women. Otherwise, they would not advance. Pregnancy was always the exclusion criteria to the extent that in 19, I can't remember when, that SIOMS, I mean, advocate for research in pregnant women, because there's no data to support the use of any medicine in pregnancy.
Right? Okay. So that's a tough one, isn't it? It's a really
yes.
difficult one. Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, the fact that millions of women in America took the vaccine allowed or paved the way for many other pregnant women on this part of the world now to safely take the vaccine, right? Because it has been trialed in a way. But, you know, let's conclude with, why do you think it's important to increase awareness about research ethics amongst the public, Alex? Why are you doing this show? It's really what I'm asking,
You're right. So I think it's very important that that we need to educate the people, the public, that they know their rights in participating in research. So it's not that just the person like wearing the white coat to say so, like ask you to, you know, give them your blood or whatever tissue samples. But I think it's really important that I think we need to shape our public in this whole healthy research environment and the system itself, because I think all play very important role for all these stakeholders, especially the research participants who are actually from the public. So I think this is our primary goal at the end, also to safeguard their well-being and also their welfare, while they really contribute themselves in the scientific knowledge. So we always ask ourselves, who actually owe these participants, right? So I think they really give themselves contributing to the science. So that's why I think, as mentioned in our principle, do no harm. So wherever these people really come with a goodwill, so I think in return, we must treat these people as a human being as well. Yeah. Maybe Dr. Julia also can provide more about these things.
All right. So basically, research, there is this ecosystem, research ecosystem, right? With a lot of stakeholders, of which public is one of them. And it's very important for everybody to know that an action of one stakeholder will influence the action of the others. And also the awareness is important, so that the public know what is their right, whether they can say yes or no, what they can ask for, and also to have that trust in science, that there is a process, a mechanism in place to always make sure that the welfare of the participant is protected, so that when they have the trust, I think they will be maybe less hesitant to contribute and to participate in research, because the aim of research is always on the well-being of the society at large. So I think that's why it is very important for everybody, including the public, to know about research ethics.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick-Ankerson, Coordinator of the Master of Health Research Ethics Program from University of Malaya, together with Dr. Alex Pang, Medical Research Ethics Committee Member from University of Malaya Medical Center, speaking to us about understanding ethics in medical research on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.